2023, Cooper v. McDonough. Mr. Is it Adig?
Yes, my name is Chris Adig, representing the appellant Robert Cooper. I'm joined today by co-counsel Haley Smith, who's appearing for the first time before the Federal Circuit. May it please the Court. This case presents a question of pure statutory interpretation. Does the phrase donation from a public relief organization in 38 U.S.C. 1503A1 include state unemployment payments? Mr. Cooper argues that it does, and that the Veterans Court erred in finding otherwise for three reasons. First, the Veterans Court relied on a principle unique to tax law to narrowly construe the meaning of the word relief. The Veterans Court used a canon that's designed to protect Congress's broad taxing power to narrowly construe Congress's spending power, resulting in a holding that unemployment, state unemployment payments are not relief because they're provided, quote, as a matter of right based on employment status.
And you seem to make an argument with respect to Wisconsin payments that it's somehow, I guess this is a question, is it your argument that these payments should count because they're different, because there's no employee contribution?
That's a part of the reason that we believe that they're not donations, Your Honor. They're not donations because they're non-contributory. And I do know there are...
Your view would be that if they were anything that's contributory would not be considered a donation.
I would argue that here. It's not specifically at issue. I would agree with that. I think an argument could be made in the case of the three states where it's contributory that those are de minimis charges meant for a specific purpose to maintain the solvency of the fund. But that's beyond, I think, the scope of the case, and we didn't brief that. But in terms of this case, because it's non-contributory, we would say that it...
But aren't they still earned? I mean, aren't unemployment payments to the employee still earned by virtue of his prior employment?
In a social context, yes, Your Honor. In a legal context, no. Because when we start talking about earned rights or accrued property interest or contractual rights, we're going to start pulling in these constitutional protections that the Supreme Court has viewed with disfavor, the idea...
Well, except we're picking between choices here. That makes it at least not a gift because it's earned. I mean, I take your point that maybe certain earnings in certain contexts, but in this context, it's something that's earned.
In a sense, yes. I don't agree in the legal sense that it is earned, and I like the Veterans Court's definition of donation as a charitable transfer of money because it doesn't speak to gifts. I think it would be hard press to find any American on the street that would think of unemployment as a gift from the government.
Do you agree that unemployment payments are properly characterized as unemployment insurance by the court?
I do not, Your Honor. I do not. And I think we have support for that going all the way back to the House committee reports in 1935 that made that point.
What about the fact that at JA 123, you have the Wisconsin benefits, it's a paid summary, and it refers to it very clearly. It says Wisconsin Unemployment Insurance right in it, and Wisconsin Unemployment Insurance Benefits Paid Summary.
The House committee in 1935 pointed out that even back then there was references that it's unemployment insurance, and they described that as an inaccurate description, that it's unemployment compensation.
But what about on the face of the payments made to your client? It's referred to as insurance right on there.
And that's our point, Your Honor, is that when we're talking about unemployment insurance in the social context, in the daily conversation about these benefits, that's become an accepted way of talking about it. But it is not insurance. It's not traditional insurance where an employee, except in those three states, pays 60 cents per $1,000 in Pennsylvania as their unemployment tax.
The employer pays it.
In all but Pennsylvania, Alaska, and New Jersey are the three states where the employee pays. But the employer pays that premium. That does not make it necessarily insurance such that it would make it not a donation for purposes of 1503 because the employee themselves are not paying that tax. And I think
But I guess why shouldn't we consider these donations or these unemployment compensations as income based on prior compensation in the sense that the government necessarily received some prior compensation in taxes that were connected to Mr. Cooper's employment time?
I think there's a policy issue or question at issue, Your Honor. And if I could, one of the underlying tenets of this idea of the non-service-connected pension.
I mean, if Mr. Cooper had not been previously employed, the government never would have collected those taxes that were based on his time of employment, right?
If Mr. Cooper had not been previously employed, and he would not, if he lived in one of the states, they would not have collected a tax from him.
Well, if he just hadn't been working,
they would not have
those taxes that the federal government received that were connected to Mr. Cooper's employment, the government wouldn't have received those taxes, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And the whole point of this program is the government is vacuuming up taxes based on employees' employment. And then whenever anybody becomes unemployed through no fault of their own, then the government redistributes those collected taxes to unemployed people from the collected taxes.
And I think for your...
So in that sense, that's why the analogy to insurance makes sense. Because people are paying in on the front end, and then when something happens, i.e. in this instance, unemployment through no fault of the person's, they are able to collect something called unemployment compensation, which is akin to insurance payments.
I think in terms of when we talk about unemployment compensation, it is income in some context. It is the federal government taxes unemployment compensation.
What I'm trying to explore is it feels qualitatively something different than pure welfare. Somebody's in need and they establish that they are in some sort of economic duress, and then they're able to receive something called welfare. And it's not in all, those payments are not in any way connected to anything else, like what we have here with unemployment compensation, where somebody was working, and during the time of employment, the government was collecting taxes on that employment.
One of the things that I can understand that position, Your Honor. I can understand seeing unemployment compensation as being different than temporary assistance to needy families, welfare type, because there is this kind of component of there is a contribution into the system. I think in terms of TANF benefits or welfare, however you want to refer to it, there's a contribution somewhere along the system. That money just doesn't come out of thin air. It comes from somebody's taxes. There's always a contribution somewhere. And I think for purposes of the non-service-connected pension, what we're looking at is this allowable or excludable income? And the question becomes, is it the actual recipient of the non-service-connected pension who's contributing? And in that case, it probably is not welfare if there is, or public relief, if there's a matching contribution from the recipient. When there's a third-party contribution or somebody else making that contribution, it does have more of that sense from our perspective, from Mr. Cooper's perspective, of being relief or being welfare, because that money is coming from somewhere other than the intended beneficiary. And that's one of the distinctions that I think is important to make, is that even where unemployed...
So then your case does rest on the idea that it's Mr. Cooper's employer that was paying those taxes to the federal government and not Mr. Cooper himself? That's what I'm hearing now.
One component, yes, that whether or not it is a donation, whether or not unemployment compensation is legally...
So then would we have to think of Mr. Cooper's employer as having donated money to the federal government, and then ultimately on the back end when Mr. Cooper becomes employed, the federal government is donating money to Mr. Cooper?
I don't know that you would have to think of it like that, Your Honor. I think that there wouldn't be a framework for thinking of it like that down the road. In other words, what we're trying to do is characterize this payment.
Well, I have to characterize both payments, you know, to get to where you want to. I also have to think about the money, the taxes that the federal government is collecting on the front end, and what is the nature of those payments. I can't just push that to the side and ignore it and pretend it didn't happen and then just focus, you know, very narrowly on the payments of unemployment compensation that Mr. Cooper's receiving. I have to think of the whole basket together and try to figure out what is the nature of all of these transactions together and understand whether or not this is just something that can be purely recognized as a gift, as you want unemployment comp to mean, or is it part of some larger set of transactions that's really more like an insurance pooling scheme?
I understand, and with respect, Your Honor, I disagree. I don't know that that the court does need to think about the employer's role in that contribution necessarily in determining whether or not the veteran can count or exclude it as income. I don't know that it adds or changes any value to think of whether where the money came to pay for the TANF benefits or where the money came from to pay for Social Security supplemental income.
Can I ask you, I just don't know the answer to this question, and I should. Does the amount of unemployment that the recipient gets, is that predicated either on how long he'd worked for the employer or the amount of salary? Is that, do those two factors factor into the actual amount that you get in unemployment insurance?
Every state is different, Your Honor, and I confess to not knowing the ins and outs of Wisconsin, but my understanding is that most states do factor in the period of employment, the length of employment, the salary as a factor, the wages that were received, all as factors in computing the amount of the benefit. And it is not a full replacement of the salary.
It's which would also kind of, in a little way, push towards this not being a donation, right?
Can I think about that for a minute, Your Honor?
Well, make it more of an insurance program, which you're resisting here in the conversation with Judge Stowe.
I think, in my mind, Your Honor, that feels more like an actuarial computation, and I hate to use that word because that does evoke the idea of insurance. And so I regret my own choice of words. But it does seem more like a mathematical computation. There's a limited pool of money available. An unemployment compensation recipient does not get 100% wage replacement. They get a portion because there's not enough to pay everybody everything that they've earned. And so that is, in my mind, a way to kind of fairly break down how that money is going to be apportioned between a large pool of unemployment applicants. And that, to me, doesn't feel as much about insurance as it is guarding the public fisc and making sure that that money is available for other people, too.
Can I just ask you before your time runs out? I just want to, just a technical question. I know, I recall that there was some request for relief pending, a waiver, I guess you call it. Is that been adjudicated yet?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't have access to the system, the VA benefits management system below the Veterans Court, so I can't see what's going on. In that case, my belief is that it has been, it is not being adjudicated in all likelihood until this case is resolved. If this court was to find that it's not a valid act to include that income, that would change the nature of the waiver. Obviously, there wouldn't be a waiver request anymore. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there's any further questions.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. This court should affirm the decision of the Veterans Court because unemployment insurance does not constitute a donation by a relief or welfare organization under the limited statutory exception in Section 1503. A donation is a gift, and we've cited pretty extensive scholarly work, the Supreme Court's decision in Java, as well as the legislative history of the Social Security Act, to demonstrate that the touchstone for unemployment insurance is the notion that it's earned as a matter of right.
Well, you spent some time in your brief talking about this being a contractual right, and I'm not sure why you went down that rabbit hole necessarily, particularly because there seems to be Supreme Court precedent that cuts against you in that area.
Right. I think we may have given a stronger impression than we intended there. I think it's the earned as a matter of right that is the key aspect of it. Supreme Court in Java did quote the legislative history that discussed this being a contractual right. I think the sense we were trying to convey was that that was the ethos that the Joint Committee on Economic Security was conveying. But we're not literally saying it's a contract.
And you don't think that we would need that to conclude there was a contractual right in order to affirm it?
No, not at all. But if one reads the Supreme Court's decision in Java, and I think the other best place is the Yale Law Journal article we cited, the Charity versus Social Insurance. Java talks about it being as a matter of right, talks about it in opposition. The legislative history cited in Java, and it's at pages 131, 132, 133, all of them talk about this in opposition to the idea of relief or welfare. So it was a dichotomy. This is so that people don't have to use relief or welfare. Similarly, in the Yale Law Journal article, it talks about how the notion of this being earned as a matter of right was the word I think the author uses is ubiquitous in the legislative history. So that's the idea. It shouldn't be lost in this discussion that the Wisconsin statute itself that we cited in our brief, section 1801 period 1 subsection 1, uses that exact terminology. It says the benefits are given as a matter of right. So even in Wisconsin system, it's understood that way. And based on the colloquy in the opening remarks with appellant, I look back at the statutory section, and indeed, it's in the Wisconsin statutes, if you print them out on Westlaw, it's chapter 108.1, unemployment insurance and reserves. And that is consistent with the way they're paid into this works, that it's paid into the system.
Unemployment compensation taxable income?
Yes. So we cited this in our brief. This is an IRS publication 4912 at page D1. Under the tax system, unemployment insurance income is taxable, welfare is not. We said there's a footnote on this. There was a brief change during the pandemic for that, but that's the general baseline.
Let me ask you about the word relief, because I think your discussion of relief suggests that it's paid only to it's financial relief to indigents. And, you know, the government, I mean, relief, it's a lot of money that the government pays out. And there's types of relief that it pays out. But there are certainly contexts in which everyone calls it relief. And it's not paid to indigents. I mean, it's paid, after a hurricane, there's a relief fund that goes to the victims of the hurricane. But those aren't necessarily indigents. And in fact, there's no means testing there, as to who needs the relief or to what extent people actually need the relief. But it's still called relief. Right?
To Your Honor's question, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that scheme, but I suspect that when a hurricane-type relief is doled out, that there would be some requirement that one would have to be, and it might not be a means-testing need, but I suspect they're not giving it to someone who hasn't suffered some kind of damage as a result
of
the hurricane.
They've suffered some damage, but suffering damage is different than relief to indigents who need it, which is more like the means testing. Like, we're giving it to people who need it, and there is no need testing, as far as I know, for hurricane, no means testing for hurricane relief and so forth. They could be gazillionaires and have 14 homes, but if you lose one, you're going to get whatever payments everybody else who lost one is going to get. Right?
Fair enough. I think to answer maybe the underlying question here, we discussed this in our brief. In the legislative history context of the Social Security Act of 1935, welfare and relief organization had a specific meaning, and at least in this legal sense, and we even cited the Black's Law Dictionary definition here. This is thinking of charitable type relief. The difference here is that unemployment insurance is earned, and in fact. One doesn't get unemployment. It's not just that it's typically depends on the nature and salary and length of one's employment. One doesn't get it at all if one hasn't worked. One actually provides one's work. As someone who's, I'm not 100% sure this is
the requirements that you have worked for a certain amount of time in many states, right? You can't get it if you started one day and then you get laid off. I think there's probably a requirement. Or maybe it's tested to how much you get based on the longevity of your.
I don't know if one day would earn you like one penny of unemployment insurance, but I think that's basically correct. When I think of this, I always think of myself as like an 18-year-old coming out of high school, and if I were like unemployed and not going to college and hadn't worked a day in my life, I'm not sure that I don't think you would get unemployment insurance. You have to earn it through the working. And we cited. I think you could look at a lot of sources on this, but we cited the UCLA article at page 379 to explain that the economic theory behind unemployment insurance is that it is a compensatory system, and that the employer's compensations are on the employer's contributions are on behalf of the employee. As Appellant's counsel points out, there are even three states where the employee pays it directly. And as we pointed out in our brief, it would be a pretty absurd result if only the people in those three states. I think it's Alaska, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. I may be getting Pennsylvania wrong. If those were the only folks who, for whom this was income. The other half of this is that fast forwarding to 1978, Congress in 1978, when it created the current section of Section 1503, was very clear, both in the statutory language and the relevant legislative history that the Veterans Court discussed and that we discussed, that they were trying to use very broad language to limit the number of exceptions, right? It's all income from any kind of, from any source of any kind, including, by the way, salary, and unemployment insurance is supposed to be essentially salary replacement, is counted for income. The idea here is that, you know, these pensions, this isn't like the normal veterans benefits that are based on disability or service. This is a special needs-based pension, and Congress wanted people who didn't have income from another source, who truly needed it, to get these pensions, and made clear that there used to be a lot of loopholes and they wanted to reduce those. They have a limited number of exceptions. They've enacted a few more, not including unemployment insurance, by the way. We've discussed this in our brief. So that's very broad language. All payments from any source of any kind. And again, as we pointed out in our brief, that is not something that the concept that the exceptions when Congress uses such broad language should be construed narrowly is not a concept that's limited to the tax arena. We cited the A.H. Phillips case, the TRW case, but it's a common principle and certainly applies here. Again, unemployment insurance are not a donation. They're not a gift from a relief or welfare organization. And we got off Wisconsin before I had gotten to make my last point on that issue. Even the Wisconsin of Workforce Development itself, and again, we cited this in our brief, at page 20 to 21, it says that it's not part of any federal or state welfare program. That's in the introduction to their handbook. So it's just kind of a square peg, round hole issue. You know, I understand Your Honor's point about colloquially, you could potentially look at this as relief, but that's not what this exception is about. Unemployment insurance is not the type of charity that Congress was looking at when it made this exception. And Congress has, over the years, had innumerable opportunities to add this as a specific exception, if it wanted to, as it did the compensated work therapy programs, which I don't think we need to go into detail on that, but we explained, and the Veterans Court explained, how Congress viewed those kind of differently than actual work, but it hasn't made an exception. It hasn't included this as an exception. That's why this court should affirm the decision.
So in your view, the way we're supposed to construe the statutes, Congress has these explicit exceptions. Does that mean that it should cut against your friend because this isn't on the list? Or does that mean that we look at the nature of the exceptions, like the CWT, and see whether that globally can encompass how that relates to the unemployment?
It only helps us, Your Honor. I mean, Congress has enacted when Congress has used extremely broad language and made it clear it really wants to pull in everything other than these enumerated exceptions. The Supreme Court and other courts have recognized that it's not a good idea to be reading those exceptions broadly. And in particular, in the context here, where social unemployment insurance has existed since 1935 and Congress has made various amendments to pull in specific things. And it's worth noting that it did not, CWT, for example, is not under the exception we're looking at. Congress enacted a separate statute, 38 U.S.C. 1718, to specifically name that as an exception. And it's a separate thing. I mean, to get a little bit into the details, as the Veterans Court explained, it's kind of a rehabilitative therapeutic program. And Congress can make a policy decision that says, we want to promote these programs. We don't consider them quite the same as work, even though you're working as part of the program. And so we're going to exempt that specific thing. But that doesn't bring unemployment insurance into Section 1503A, which is which is a donation from a public or private relief or welfare organization. And just to put a fine point on that, Congress amended the statute, I think it's in 2004, 2010, and 2012, to add specific things to be exempted. None of them were unemployment insurance.
What do you think is the Veterans Court point by bringing up the tax law statutory construction principle in the context of a veterans benefits regime?
Well, the Veterans Court brought it up in what I'd loosely describe as the background section of their analysis, and then there's, you know, essentially 8 pages of additional analysis actually reading the statute directly. So I'm not sure that the Veterans Court was looking at this as a tax specific point as much as the broader point that I think we made in our brief, that this kind of thing, when there's broad language, you construe it narrowly. But also I think because the argument is fairly tax adjacent.
We agree that principle that was from tax law doesn't really apply here to this veterans benefits regime. Do you agree with that?
Yes, but I would suggest that the principle from the tax case that the Veterans Court was citing is a principle that is contrary to appellant's claims, not at all exclusive to tax. It may come up in a specific variety in tax, but I mean, we cited.
So did the Veterans Court rely on it, or was it just a mere throat-clearing exercise?
It seemed like a throat-clearing exercise to us, and that's what we said in our brief, because it's in the background section and it doesn't come up again.
But then you just said that whatever that tax law principle is, it's entirely consistent with how to read the statute here, which makes it sound like you're saying it is relevant to how we should think about this statute.
I think it is consistent, but one doesn't need to rely on that tax law principle in order to sustain the veterans.
It's consistent
analysis.
Because we need to think about that same principle in the context of veterans' benefits.
I think that one does not need to reach that principle to sustain the decision in this case, but it is perfectly consistent, and certainly, I mean, it would not be out of place for this court to cite, for example, the Supreme Court's decision in TRW that says, when Congress explicitly enumerates certain exceptions to a general prohibition, additional exceptions are not to be implied in the absence of evidence of a contrary legislative intent. Here, the legislative intent, I think, is on our side. So I don't think that type of citation would be out of place in the analysis here, but I'm not sure when one needs it, because I think the Veterans Court's analysis of the statute for the 8 pages of its opinion where it was specifically talking about the statute is more than adequate. But as Your Honors well know, this Court has said time and again, I think we cited a Wavetronics case on this, that we review judgments, not the language of opinions. And that principle would certainly apply in connection with this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Some time for rebuttal. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's 3 reasons, Your Honor, why unemployment payments are not insurance. First, I would ask the Court to look at H.R. 74-615 from 1935, which explains that unemployment, to the extent it is characterized as insurance, if that's not an accurate characterization from Congress's perspective. But more importantly, insurance is a contract. Insurance is a contract between the insured and the insurer. Somebody pays a premium, and in exchange, there's a benefit that's paid to that individual. That is not the case here, because the benefit paid is not in any proportion related to the premiums made. If I buy life insurance for one of my employees as a business owner, and that employee dies, and I give half of that to the spouse of my employee, that would never be considered insurance for the spouse that I'm giving. It would be considered a gift or a donation. There is no contract here. There's no written contract. And to find that there is insurance, that unemployment is insurance, would be to kind of pull in protections, those constitutional protections under the contract clause, and possibly equal protection under social welfare. I wanted to talk about the compensated work therapy for just a second. The non-service-connected pension, the basic underlying principle is that it provides a basic level of income for disabled, permanently and totally disabled wartime veterans, and that all taxpayers share in that burden because we all pay and contribute to that. Put that premise on hold for just a second, and the Congress created this compensated work therapy program where they said, we want to give the VA the opportunity to assess if people can come back to work, employers can pay them. We're not going to count it as income. We're going to incentivize this program. But underlying that program is a policy choice. And Congress's policy choice was, we have the opportunity here today in 1986 to say, we're going to make those CWT payments. We're going to go ahead and include them as income, and that's going to transfer the burden of caring for these indigent veterans, these wartime permanently and total disabled veterans, to CWT employers. And Congress said, no, that's not, they didn't explicitly say that, but they did that. They refused to transfer.
But how does that help you here? Congress recognizes that there ought to be exceptions, and it in fact enacts exceptions, and you're not one of them.
It shows that what the Veterans Court has done is make a very different policy choice that's not in their bailiwick to make, to say that
unemployment... But you're right, which is, doesn't that cut against you? The answer is, this demonstrates that if Congress wants to create an exception, it's up to Congress, not to us, not to the Veterans Court. And if it agrees with you, then it might prospectively do that. But it hasn't done that here, and it's clearly demonstrated that it's ready, willing, and able to make to list those exceptions out.
That kind of gets back to our core point, which is that the meaning of unemployment compensation is wrapped in 1503A1. And so Congress wouldn't see a need to modify the statute if they believe that the underlying policy supports allowing veterans to exclude those payments from income in the calculation of the non-service-connected pension. And I would agree with my colleague on one extent. If the court is going to affirm the Veterans Court and find our arguments are not persuasive, we would ask that the court ask the Veterans Court or suggest that they not use a tax principle to adjudicate veterans' benefits. It has no place.
Well, you would agree, however, that they didn't actually use it. They referred to it, but don't you agree with your friend that in their analysis of their deciding this issue, they did not apply it to reach the result here?
Respectfully, I don't, Judge Prost. They said at Appendix 6 that this case is relevant, which means it tends to prove a point. They then used that narrow tax principle to narrowly construe very broad language in a statute. And a statute meant that's spending for the beneficence of indigent veterans. So I think that there's a significant reliance on that case. It wasn't just throat clearing. They were saying it was relevant. They used it to set up a narrow construction of 1503A1. If the court's going to affirm the Veterans Court, we ask that they revise the decision in some way to remove that tax principle from it. But we do ask that the court reverse the Veterans Court and find that state unemployment payments are excludable from income for non-service-connected pension purposes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank both sides, and the case is submitted.